Yes, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant. This is Now We're Talking. With me, as always, is Keith. And Keith, recently we've really been on a roll with this whole playing songs thing, and not just the playing songs thing, but sort of doing it thematically.
Yeah.
Was it the last show we did 2 weeks ago together was the 80s nostalgia, where we actually did commentary while watching the clips? That was a bit adventurous.
Yeah.
We weren't sure if that was going to work, but it worked for us.
Yeah.
And I think it might have worked for people.
Yeah. Turns out all that matters is that it worked for us.
Yeah, it really does. Let's be candid. Let's not pull any punches here tonight. But yeah, folks, thanks for tuning in tonight. It's a pleasure to have you. What we're going to do tonight is we're going to kind of continue in a way with some of the themes we've done recently by focusing on, what is it, Keith? Musical memories for us that conjure up very specific events or people. You break it down because this was your idea.
Yeah, I mean, I said the phrase I use is sense memory, which isn't exactly right. It's not the definition of this, but it's that thing where you hear a song and it makes you feel a specific way because it's linked to a memory.
A very specific memory.
Yeah, and I thought in line with what we were doing, we were talking about things we love and our favorite things. This is sort of like that subconscious favorite thing, where it's your brain, it's locked that away in there.
Yeah, so it's a little bit, it is distinct from the last show we did because, or at least if I think of my own list, for example, we played Neutron Dance. It wasn't that it specifically took me to a moment. Mm-hmm. I just generally remember the song and generally remember that it made me feel good.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, the songs that I've selected take me back to a specific memory.
Yeah, this is more personal. And it's like that, the emotion first, right?
Yeah.
And that's, the genesis of it, was just getting to that emotion first.
Yeah, right. So we've got three songs each, and we're going to sort of go through it. For each of us, our three will be done chronologically. I don't know how they'll sort of interlace together, whether they'll be staggered and it'll work out this way chronologically in that sense. But we're going to start with you, and then we'll take turns. And your first, now this dude, I had no idea who he was except for the Lady in Red.
Because one time
I had to sing the Lady in Red as like a first dance at a wedding or something.
Yeah.
And of course, when I sing a new song, I'll look up the video. So I don't know if you remember the video or if you've seen the video, but it's just very much of that era. It was almost like softcore pornographic, just seeing this woman in red.
Tell me about it.
And that was my introduction to Christa Berg.
Yeah, lower your voice and tell me all the details.
But I don't know what this dude's deal is, because it seems like he's had a sort of unique career. Like, this song that we're playing here today is of the 70s, and it kind of sounds like he's a... Like, vaguely, there's a comedic element to it, which it's very different from the Lady in Red. So can you start by explaining who this De Berg guy is?
Oh, I wish I'd done my research.
Or just whatever you know.
Mike, the one thing I think of when I think of my fandom of Christa Berg is that I'm the only one of my generation who has it.
Because what is the generation that is a fan of him? Your parents?
There is none.
Never happened.
My mom was a fan.
Okay.
And so that's how I came up against him, as opposed to a nicer way of saying.
Sure.
But I'm actually a fan. He does have this, like you said, there's a comedic quality to some of his songs. There's a storytelling quality to some of his songs. What it is like, he's like kind of like a folk-hearted guy, but the music is sort of bombastic, 70s, do whatever you want, free love kind of music. Is that even a thing I just described?
It is now.
Okay.
It just became a thing.
He's got songs that are stories. Like, there's a famous one called Spanish Train about the devil and the God playing poker.
Okay. So he comes out of that like 60s, 70s singer-songwriter era where there's a lot of value placed on crafting stories and lyrics and combining it with some showmanship.
Yeah, there's another one, I think it's called The Painter, which I always liked when I was younger too, which was a story about like an affair that's happening, an illicit affair with the guy who's supposed to be painting the house. It's just like, but it's always, he's got a great voice is what it comes down to. He's got a very signature voice, and he's very talented in that regard. So good voice, good song. The music itself is of its time, for sure.
And is his last name pronounced De Berg? Is that correct?
Yes, you've got it exactly right.
Oh, good.
De Berg.
I'm so glad that I got that right. Hello, Mr. De Berg.
De Berg, your table is waiting for you. Party of four for De Berg.
That happens all the time, because he loves going out and dining out on his celebrity status.
Yeah, with three other people.
Yeah, always. It's always a party of four with De Berg. The De Berg party of four.
So do we want to get into the story?
We were talking about this before. There's always the option to, I think we've sampled all of these or most of these options. Talk about the song, play the song. Play the song, see how it feels, talk about it after.
Yeah.
Or, of course, the commentary version where we talk about it as we listen. Now, I think we should do the first or second option. It's up to you. I mean, maybe we'll just see how you feel with this specific song and that can guide the rest of the show. Are you wanting right now to hear the song and then talk about it?
Yeah, my instinct is that if we hear it, it's going to trigger my feelings and then my story will be better.
And I think that'll be good for me too, who has kind of heard the song, but to actually now listen to it with you.
Yeah, and then we can talk about
it. Then I'll know what you're talking about a bit better. So here we go. Chris DeBerg, Party of One with Patricia the Stripper.
Dennis is a menace with his anyone for tennis and beseeching me to come and keep the score. And Maud says, oh Lord, I'm so terribly bored. I really can't stand it anymore. I'm going out to dinner with a gorgeous singer to a little place I found down by the quay. Her name is Patricia. She calls herself Delicia. And the reason isn't very hard to see. She says God made her a sinner just to keep fat men thinner as they tumble down in heaps before her feet. They hang around in groups like battle-weary troops. One can often see them queue right down the street. You see, Patricia, or Delicia, not only is a singer, she also removes all her clothing. For Patricia is the best stripper in town. Took off her drawers and with a lick of her lips she undid all the clips, threw it all in the air, and everybody stared. And as the last piece of clothing fell to the floor, the police were banging on the door. On a Saturday night, 1924. Take it away, boys. Poor Patricia was arrested, and everyone detested the manner in which she was exposed. Later on in court, well, everybody thought a summer run in jail would be proposed. But the judge said, Patricia, or may I say Delicia, the facts of this case lie before me. Case dismissed! This girl was in her working clothes, and with a swing of her hips, she started a strip to tremendous applause. She took off her drawers and with a lick of her lips, she undid all the clips, threw it all in the air, and everybody stared. And as the last piece of clothing fell to the floor, the police
there it is, folks. Chris DeBerg with his performance of Patricia the Stripper. So lay it on me, Keith, before we discuss anything else. Let's get to the thrust of this. Why this song and what memory is it evoking? What happened in your childhood, for goodness sake?
I have so many.
It's a very perverted
you're
song.
Probably going to have to cut me short on this. Because sure. I think I could talk for an hour about it. First of all, it was a song that my mom had me when she was young. She was 18 years old.
I thought you were going to say she had you while listening to this song.
Yeah, probably. That's actually possible.
Conception and the birth.
Yeah. it's possible.
She's like, if I can't be impregnated by DeBerg,
also,
I need to listen to DeBerg.
It's also possible that it happened in her car, both things. But that's not neither here nor there. She had me when she was very young. And, you know, it was tough on her. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of her little man. We were a unit. She didn't get married to my stepfather for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
We used to drive around her old beater, and she didn't even have a tape deck in it. It was like a radio, like a tape, and she would play music.
Yeah.
And so this is, to me, the song of that experience.
And how old were you during this era?
I was so young. Yeah. It's possible that it's my earliest memory.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just a little guy, 2, 3, 4 years old or something.
Yeah, and just sitting in the car hearing this song. But it's not that emotion. I don't get an emotion of like bonding with my mother from it. The emotion I actually get is almost an emotion of sexual awakening, which is not the right term because I was too young. Mm-hmm. And it's not even an emotion, awakening. But what it is the lyrics of the song tell a story about a woman taking her clothes off.
Yes.
And I was so young that blew my mind.
Yeah.
And it stuck with me that was a thing. Not only that it was a thing unto itself, but in the song, there's two verses. And the first verse is the police are banging at the door because she's doing something wrong. And I remember my little brain trying to understand, like, why is that wrong?
Yeah, what has she done that's so wrong?
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't see people naked very often. And then the second verse is the police are yelling out for more, right? And I remember thinking on this, like, at different points in my life, like, trying to understand exactly what Patricia... And it was funny because there's this sort of, like, strange mixture of those two feelings, this, like, Oedipal sort of thing that I had, like, a sexual awakening, but it's linked to this sort of appreciation of my mother.
Yeah.
And there's just so many funny things that come from that, like the fact that when we were teenagers, it was a big joke that my mom was hot.
Yes.
Which used to make me really angry.
Yes.
Maybe because of this song.
Could be. And do you think that this song also created a lifelong, I don't want to say obsession, but appreciation for women undressing?
Yes.
Because I know you've talked about your wife oftentimes parading around in various states of undress.
Yeah.
And how you enjoy that.
She's a big fan.
And which is probably, you know, hopefully that's not an unusual thing.
No,
for husbands
I do
to
yell it
way.
From the hilltops.
Yes, yes. And of course, you have your own experience. We've talked in previous episodes about your own experience of having basically walking naked in your sleep.
Yeah, my weird naked thing.
Yeah, your weird naked thing. That's a whole other conversation. Mm-hmm. But I'm just thinking about Keith and him being naked and his wife being naked and people being naked. And wow, I feel like it all
You're
started here.
You're 100% correct in looking for something here.
Okay.
Because I don't have any sexual fetishist that I'm aware of,
mm-hmm.
but my pursuit my entire life, even as a youth exploring my sexuality and females and dating and all that stuff, my pursuit of women was almost completely limited to the idea of seeing them naked. I wasn't the kind of person who was like obsessed about sexual activity
right.
or losing my virginity. My whole mission in life was to get a girl that I liked and have us take her clothes off.
Yes.
Which is kind of sweet and simple. And I even have, like, without getting into too much detail for those out there who may be sensitive, there were times in my life where that's actually what happened, and then I didn't pursue the situation much further.
Interesting.
Like, perhaps sexual activity was on the table, and I was like, nah, that's good.
It feels like if you are a fetishist, that you're a candidate for voyeurism and exhibitionism.
Yeah, it's in
These
there
are
somewhere.
Kind of like it's swimming mm-hmm. around there somewhere.
Yeah, I need an expert to get in on this one.
And it's almost like a childlike mentality about sexuality, where, as you say, it's just like observing the woman who's naked.
It really is.
As opposed to thinking about what you want to do about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and also, like, I'm a fan of fashion.
Because a child wouldn't be thinking about what they're going to do about it. They just find it interesting.
Yeah, then trying to, like, question why it's a taboo.
Yeah.
And that's a thing for me in my life, is taboo is really interesting to me. I write mm-hmm. a lot about taboo. And fashion, that's a perfect example. I have no invested interest in fashion, except that I know a lot about women's fashion, because for some reason it intrigues me. What they wear, why they wear it, how it makes them look, how it changes the shape of their body, what they think about. That all interests me.
Yeah.
Is it because of Chris DeBerg?
Well, you know, I'm looking at the time here and I'm realizing, man, we could have just done an episode on really just the fact that his name is pronounced DeBerg.
DeBerg.
To say nothing of this conversation we've just had about Patricia the stripper and how it's influenced your conceptions of women and nudity and your mm-hmm. own nudity.
See,
but we do
one.
Have to move along.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that we talked about the age range for you. Which was like 2, like maybe 3, maybe more realistically, maybe 3, 4.
I think probably 4. I'm
4 years
saying,
old.
Yeah.
Well, that applies to me as well.
Oh,
just
cool.
coincidentally, because we were just going to choose 3 songs each. It didn't have to be childhood memories.
Yeah, and we didn't share them.
Anywhere in your life. And when I was thinking about songs that just made a huge impression on me and memories that go along with them, I was just thinking, you know, when I was about the same, 4 years old, this was a song that I remember hearing on the radio, and I think it was just one of the first times in one of my earliest memories, generally speaking, and certainly of music, where I just remember also in the car. I just remember hearing this song. It probably came on the radio, and I looked it up, and I saw that this was released in 85 when I was 4, almost 5 years old. So it was probably a hit at the time. It was definitely a hit at the time. And so maybe it came on a few times. But I just have like memories of driving around and just basically little four-year-old Jeff just thinking, you know what? That's a good song. You know, just like thinking.
It was your first appreciation.
You know, not really like obviously having the tools to break it down, but just generally thinking, this is a good song. And so it's interesting for me now to listen to it all these years later, having heard many more songs and, you know, playing songs and thinking about songs, and to basically have the exact same opinion, like, wow, this is a great song. So, and I know that you love this song as well. So we'll play
excited.
It. We'll talk about it a little bit afterwards. Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World. Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears. And kind of what's happening, definitely what's happening while we're listening to these tracks as we're talking about it and maybe doing the commentary that we could be doing on top. But I want the songs to play out because I want people to hear them without us necessarily, without there being too much information in people's ears. But yeah, I was just saying as we listened to it, man, I just there's an emotion in all of these little pieces of the music, this some of the guitar parts. And for me now, when I notice how it's making me feel emotionally, I'm like, yes, yes, these are the emotions that I remember feeling at that age. And that's why I chose this song, why I find it so interesting is this is a unique piece of music for me that has nothing to do with my Beatles obsession or anything like that. It's just a song by a band that otherwise I'm aware of, but I don't really care about their other songs. It's just this specific song that I just find it so intriguing that whatever it made me feel at such a young age completely holds up now, not just for nostalgia, but for how it makes me feel in the present moment.
Not to make you say something you said off air, but the way you described the lyric that you were talking about was really interesting, where like, now you can appreciate... So yeah, go ahead.
Oh, there's a bunch of lyrics that that make me feel that it's a well-written song lyrically, but yeah, I can't stand this indecision married with a lack of vision. I mean, right now I can see the poetry in that and the capability of that, but as a little kid, I remember thinking like, "Oh, that's a cool turn of phrase," or whatever.
Yeah, like it actually registered with you at both times.
Yeah, maybe it was just the sound of it. You know, I didn't really know what the words meant, but there's just something about it that it just seemed to fit really well. I think that's what this song is for me. Just the pieces just seem to fit together really well.
Yeah, great stuff.
Which is nice.
All I wanted to share with you about it was that I didn't tell you before was that it's the only album I ever bought twice, and I mean actual record.
Why did you have to buy it twice?
Because I liked it so much that I got really excited, and I bought it a second time, forgetting I already had it.
Cool.
Yeah, so it was like,
it was because you played the first record so many times it fell apart.
Yeah, hard to wear out a record, but that would have been a better story probably. But that, yeah, it was funny. I had this collection of like minimal collection of records, and on either end of it was that album.
Nice. Yeah. Bookending it. Yeah. Sweet. And was the song Shout on that one as well? That was the other big radio single,
they had,
I think,
three real big ones off of it. And I love
it. It was kind of like a little bit of a duo thing going on in the early 80s. Tears for Fears, Wham, Hall & Oates.
Yeah, I think Thompson Twins were two.
Nelson is another one.
Shut up.
Two.
Not
that's
the
another
same.
One. And speaking of Wood, but they were a duo, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
So there was, I don't know, it's funny you see that those happen at certain periods of time and you're like, oh, I guess this kind of was a thing, a bit of a phenomenon at the time. But that brings us up to our next,
Nelson.
Our next song. That was an inadvertent tie-in there on my part. But Nelson, yeah, After the Rain. So how much are we going to talk about this now versus just playing it?
Yeah, it's a shorter story, so I mean, we could play it. I think what we might need to do with this one is play it.
Okay.
And then see if we want to listen to the whole thing, because it's not chosen because I love the song.
Okay.
It's chosen because it just connects me to a feeling really, really
specific. Yeah, some of these songs, we're going to be talking about how much we love the song. And other times, I'm going to be like, yeah, the song's okay, but it reminds me of a very specific life moment. Okay, here it is, After the Rain by Nelson. Oh, yeah. After the Rain by Nelson.
That's enough of that one.
We've just had a conversation and said, okay, we get it. We get it. We get it. Now you get it as an audience member. And now we can kind of get to the point here, which is why the song.
Yeah,
what's
fine.
The memory?
I want to reiterate the idea that we're on our way through some sort of hall, on our way to a conference, and there's a wedding reception going on.
Yeah.
We walk past the door, and that's the sound of the music coming from inside.
And everybody is dressed as Nelson. So it's actually a themed wedding.
Amazing.
It's not just a wedding where they automatically play this
long
song.
Long blonde wigs.
Because as I was saying, like, I can see why that song was a hit, but it's a little... Even though it's got all the pieces, it sounds a little bit generic.
Yeah, very much so.
So I don't think it would actually make it into like the wedding repertoire unless it was a themed wedding.
Maybe you're right. Oh, that made me sad. Yeah, I mean, the story is one of a young love, I suppose.
Okay.
Where I was going into a new school situation, French immersion, actually.
Okay.
And going into from grade 6 to 7, mm-hmm. I went to a new school, junior high school. It's the way it works in the East Coast.
Yep.
And we did these sort of preparatory classes. One of which was calligraphy for some reason.
That seems strange.
Which this song connects me to doing calligraphy.
Wow, what a magical land, the newfound land.
So this was a song I guess was popular or I was listening to at the time.
Okay.
And I had this amazing thing where I'd go to this class on Saturday mornings to get us ready for French immersion. And there was a girl in the class and we'd eyeball each other.
Do you remember her name?
I don't. Okay. And it's probably for the best. Because I'd be looking her up on Facebook right now because I'm a sick guy.
It would be ironic if she was one of our listeners and this could have been the moment. She's like, well, oh my God, Keith remembers me.
Obviously, that's what I'm hoping for. Let's do it.
Yeah.
No, all jokes aside, her name was Nelson.
Okay.
And so,
perfect.
So we had like a shy exchange of phone numbers and we had like a long distance phone relationship.
You would talk frequently
on
the phone. We'd
talk on the phone.
Wow.
In between school. And then when we finally got the punchline, I suppose, if we don't want to take too long with this, is that when we did get to that school, she had dropped out of the French immersion program.
Couldn't
hack it.
So she
wasn't in my class. And I guess it's a new, bright lights, big city, new situation. I wasn't cool anymore.
What?
And she didn't talk to me for the whole year. And I was kind of heartbroken until I won an award at the end of the year. I won the Athlete of the Year. First and only ever freshman to do it at my junior high.
And this song played as you collected the award?
I played it myself with my wig and my guitar and my white jeans. The white jeans part of that story is the only true part. And then she came and talked to me afterwards and congratulated me. And I remember thinking, it was my first ever like young love to get out of my face. That moment where I went like, I see
lost
how you
doubt.
Yeah, you didn't value me then.
Yeah.
And I wasn't mean to her because I wasn't a mean guy. But I remember that song makes me think of
but
her and that
like
whole
she
thing.
She had regained her interest because now you had status.
Exactly.
Do you think that's what she was doing?
No doubt.
Wow.
Which is why it's good that I don't remember her name because that's kind of mean.
And you say you had this phone relationship. When you had the phone relationship, were you also chatting a lot at school too? Or was it kind of phone only?
It was almost phone only.
Interesting.
Like as our parents were picking us up, we would briefly speak.
Oh, really?
And so you'd hand each other a note.
Oh, really? So you'd shyly connect in person, but really the relationship was forged on the
phone. Yeah, it was bloody adorable.
Oh, how long would the phone conversations last?
I'd say like a child amount of time, 15 or 20 minutes.
And what would you talk about?
I don't remember. Probably Nelson. Why wouldn't we be talking about
So Nelson connected you.
Yeah, man.
And you also mentioned, not to get off topic, but you mentioned the white jeans.
Yeah.
Did you have a go-to pair of white jeans or multiple pairs of white pants?
I had multiple pairs of jeans of multicolored, many colors.
Oh.
And I had green ones.
Wow.
And black ones. And maybe blue ones?
Wow.
Yeah. But white ones were those were my special jeans.
Wow.
Those were my banquet jeans.
Well, I have to say, just to segue here, when I think about white jeans, it makes me think about boys in bright white
sports cars,
Keith. It really does.
Segue.
Talking about the segue. When I was thinking about songs here, Everybody Wants to Rule the World came to mind as a young childhood memory. And then I was remembering probably when I was like 11 or 12 years old, I realized how it worked to call into the local rock station in Victoria.
Nice.
And to have that experience of calling the radios, like calling the place that is broadcasting music to you, you know, through the radio. It just seemed like such a magical thing that it was that you could contact those people directly. I don't know. It just seemed like you're tapping into something much bigger than yourself. And so for me, that was thrilling to think that was even possible. And I don't know. I think you probably have to call like over and over, and you keep getting at the time you get a busy signal or something. And I guess I just managed to squeak through. And I think I chose this song because at the time my brother had been making fun of it or something. That, like, I don't know why I would have known this song because in the early 90s, it certainly wasn't. This is a song from, I think, from the late 70s or early 80s. Anyway, I think at the time I thought it was a hilarious premise for a song. And kind of like I was saying with the Tears for Fears song, how what I felt as a small child totally holds up at this moment. Yeah. Same thing here. At the time, I selected the song in a somewhat mocking way. Just like, who would love this song? And who would choose this as their, they get one shot to have a song played on the radio.
Ever
and
in your whole
life. Choose this. Why would it be this one? And for me, I mean, I'm not ridiculing the song itself, but just the idea that there's a song about boys in a bright white sports car waving their hands in the air. Who do they think they mm-hmm. are? But more importantly, where did they get that car?
Yeah.
I love
it. We have to know. So we inquiring minds want to know.
We'll talk about it more maybe after playing it. Maybe you've never heard the song before, but just listen to the lyrics and enjoy. Boys in the Bright White Sports Car by Trooper.
Here they come.
I mean, the reality of this song is it's pretty rockin'.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty rockin', some sweet riffage,
mm-hmm.
some sweet la-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, it's livelier. It's not generic like the Nelson song.
No, it's definitely not. It's definitely got its own flavor, and I'll give them that. But I was saying to you as we were listening to it, usually when there's a song, I guess any given song, it feels like the singer is the protagonist.
Yeah.
So if the song's about these boys in the bright white sports car, who do they think they are? My default notion would be, oh yeah, who are these guys? They're probably the jocks. They get all the girls. Like, screw those guys or whatever. But then I listened to it and I realized, I think that the boys in the bright white sports car are just like decent guys who just happen to have a bright white sports car. And they're honking at the girls. But, you know, they're not being disrespectful in how they honk. It's just a quick little honk. They're not really laying into the honk mm-hmm. or ogling them for
yeah,
too
maybe
long.
Maybe they know the girl.
Yeah, maybe they know the girls. Maybe they're saying hello to their friends who are girls.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I think that the singer is actually like a curmudgeon. I don't know if he goes to the same school and he's a teenager also or whether he's an old man who's angry about his life.
Watching
but just when
the
he's
street.
Like, who do they think they are? Where did they get their cars? It's like he's furious. And then we were listening in the other section where he's like, there they go. The boys are really rolling. I'm like, that's the truth is that he's he's pretending that he's opposed to this, but really, I think he's feeling left out.
Yeah, he can see that they're rolling. And
yeah,
he's
they're
not,
rolling. Yeah. He's like, not just that they're rolling, but man, they're really
rolling.
Yeah,
they're rolling. Really rolling.
I think that I'm really missing out.
He can't even be curmudgeonly enough to overcome how hard they're rolling.
In that moment, right? That's how much rolling is happening. So for me, it helps me to understand. I think it's actually a sad song.
Yeah, like he's the villain was the word you used, which is really funny.
Yeah, he's villainous.
He's the villain.
I think he's the villain. So I think what's interesting about that song now for me to think reflect back on it is that, I think it's kind of a sad, melancholic song couched in a rockin' late 70s vibe.
Maybe that's why the white part is so important, because it's like, this is the darkness of being curmudgeonly.
Yeah.
And that's the bright white
thing. White is the light.
The unattainable.
And he's in the dark.
Yep. We got it. Figured it out.
We figured it out. Yeah, we might as well move on now that we've got that. But yeah, that, I remember calling in and at the time enjoying that I did that. And I figured, well, we're on the radio now, so we'll play it this time. It'll be full circle. So Keith, we're doing all right for time. We do have time, thankfully, to include a couple more songs today.
Yes.
So this brings us to your third and final selection.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you want to approach this? Do you want to talk a bit about it? Preface it a little bit?
Yeah, I would like to a little bit. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I wrote one of the first big projects I wrote when I started writing professionally, air quotes, was a memoir.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be a novel. It didn't quite get there. I hadn't learned how to make things long enough yet. But it's a novella-length memoir, and all it is a chapter on every single female that I have ever been in a relationship with.
All right.
Or had an interesting
exchange with. How old were you when you wrote this?
22, probably.
That's an interesting historical document of your adolescence.
Yeah, and it was. From the first chapter is when I took a flight back home to Newfoundland to visit, and I remember noticing how nice the stewardess was being to me.
Uh-huh.
And I remember noticing her skirt. And that was sort of the first time.
How many chapters were there, by the way?
I'm not afraid how to answer this now because I don't want to sound like
But it sounds like when you say relationship, it's loosely defined as interactions with women, including a stewardess.
Yeah, of like a sexual nature, all the way from innocent to my wife.
Okay.
So I think there's 12 or 15 chapters.
What was the sexual encounter with the stewardess?
Well, that wasn't an encounter. It was just like the first time I noticed, like, oh, her skirt is kind of short.
Oh, okay.
And I had never thought that way before.
Okay. It was your sexual awakening.
Exactly. So what I'm kind of doing is Cribs notes here from some of these things. Like that story about the Nelson girl is in that memoir. And the last chapter of that memoir is all about my wife. And the whole thing is just a love story, pretty much, a love letter to my wife. But one of the other chapters, the best chapter I'm going to give to you here on the air today, and I think I can tell the story first.
Sure.
I think it's probably okay to do that with this song. This is a familiar song.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was when I was 13, I moved from Newfoundland to BC because my dad got a job out here.
Okay.
And I had a girl in elementary school that was sort of like a crush. You know, you have a crush in school. We start a bit earlier on the East Coast than they do out here. So there was some contact.
Yeah.
Relatively innocent stuff.
Physical contact.
Yeah, there was some smoochy-smooching.
Smooching.
But there was just a girl. I was like a popular kid in elementary school. I was tall for my age.
Well, and you had
athlete.
The white pants.
I had the white pants.
I love that the subtext was enough said.
I would have rolled so hard in that car, too, just for the record.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Anyway.
Up and down the coast of Newfoundland.
So what happened was, I did this weird thing when I realized I was leaving. I was very excited to leave Newfoundland. I understood the opportunity. I was smart enough and old enough to understand the opportunity that was presented to me. But I ended up focusing sort of my attentions on the idea that this girl that I'd always had an on again, off again thing with, I was going to miss her. Like, we were supposed to continue that.
Mm-hmm.
And so she became like the focal point for what I was going to miss.
Mm-hmm.
And I like kind of arbitrarily decided that this was our song. And I remember the last party that I had there before I moved away.
Retroactively or before you left?
Before I left.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And I used to listen to it and like be sad that I wasn't going to see her anymore.
Right, just to live in those emotions.
But just to be clear, she wasn't my girlfriend.
Yeah.
She was like had been sort of, but she was just someone I knew.
Yeah.
So what I did was I recorded, this is hilarious, I recorded the song to give it to her on tape, which was like a blank tape with only that song on it.
Nice.
And I bought her a necklace.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I am the man. This is going to be like the suavest thing ever.
This is going to go over well.
So good. All of the ways you can imagine it going well.
Yeah.
Get those ready. So I remember at the party, it was awkward because she didn't understand why I was so fixated on this idea that we were like together or something, right? Like we were buddies. There was nothing weird because we'd known each other for ages. And we had hung out that summer like a whole lot as sort of as friends. But she was like, what's the deal, man? Like, why do you want to talk to me? Why are you trying to give me this?
And I this is as you give it to her, she's
saying
like, that?
Well, she's nice. So she's just making like a sort of, she's making it clear that she doesn't understand what's going on.
Yes.
So I had to like kind of like push through. Imagine like an awkward kid trying to push through what he thinks is a romantic movie scene.
Yeah, and he's already decided how great it's going to play out.
Yeah, so I'm like, I'm going to give
and
her
the girl is literally like, why?
Yeah, and I'm going to show her the necklace. She's going to melt. I'm going to put it on her. We're going to kiss. It's going to be a wonderful memory for me to leave on a plane.
Leave on a high note.
And so instead, I'm like, here, I bought you this thing. She's like, okay. I'm like, let me put it on you. And I guess I bought like a child's necklace.
So it made her think her neck was fat.
No, I couldn't fasten it in the back.
Oh my God.
And there was no coming back from that.
Oh my God.
None whatsoever. And the punchline, I suppose, is that afterwards.
She's like, this is why you were never allowed to take my bra off, because you can't even put this thing on.
She's like, yeah, like this is why we're only friends. But her friend and mine afterwards, when they found out what had happened, her friend who was nice was like, came to me and was like, tell me where you got it. And so I can go get it fixed so she can wear it.
That's nice.
But everyone thought it was expensive. And I was like,
you didn't want to reveal that.
I didn't want to reveal that it was cheap. So I was just like, nah, just whatever.
Like, you know what? I got it when I was traveling abroad on Fifth Ave in New York City.
It's a special kind of platinum, so they can't just lengthen it.
So literally, you didn't take her up on the offer to have it resized because it would reveal the truth, which is that you kind of cheaped out.
Yeah. Which was pure fabrication. The whole thing was pure fabrication.
Well, here it is, folks. With all that being said, I'll be there for you. I might not be able to fit it on your neck, but I'll be there nonetheless. Bon Jovi. I just want to comment while we're still listening to the song, because we only have so much time left in the show. So again, when you had this moment where you were handing her the necklace, or imagining that you were going to hand her the necklace and put it on correctly and all that, this was sort of the theme music that would be playing.
Yeah, it just became...
Like, this was the music that underscored that movie moment you wanted to have.
Totally. It was our song, this was our moment,
yeah.
And to this day, whenever I hear this song... This is what I think of, this embarrassment that I felt.
And you mentioned to me that some years later, you know, when the Facebook thing started to happen and people realized, oh, these people from my life that I never thought I'd hear from again, I could say hello to them.
Yeah.
And you touch base with this woman.
Yeah.
And you were quite taken aback
mm-hmm.
at the life that she's led. She looked a little bit haggard, you said.
Yeah.
That sounds mean.
Yeah.
We're not being unkind here.
I think we just romanticize what we think they're
exactly.
going to be
we
like.
We have an image.
Yeah.
And also, you also mentioned that life in Newfoundland tends to do that to people.
Yeah, they move pretty fast there on all the life experiences. It looked like she had a lot of life experiences.
Do you remember her first name?
I do.
We're not going to say it, though.
I don't think. But
that's
I'm
not
afraid.
Right. Yeah, we don't want people to try to extrapolate who she is on Facebook. Folks, you're listening to Now We're Talking on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant. Alongside Keith Kennedy, we do have one more song today that we'd like to play. We've had the chance. Whoa, there, it's like Bungie doesn't want to go away.
I know. That was me. I was like, don't do it, Jeff.
I thought that we would never be hearing that song, at least for the rest of the day, yeah, or the week, but it just won't go away.
You think we're going to have a fight over whether the song is ending or not, did you?
And like, just hold, let's see if it's going to fade away.
It's like a thumb war.
Hold a second, Keith. No, oh, I see it's back. Okay, it's gone. Okay. Yeah, we had the chance this week. We each compiled three songs that evoked memories for us. We've done Keith's songs. We had the De Burgh song.
Chris De Burgh.
And the Nelson song and the Bon Jovi song. Mm-hmm. And of course,
Don't judge me.
For myself, I did a Tears for Fears song and a Trooper song. And I want to actually finish off with a Sloan song that I think I was intending to include in a previous episode. I think we were playing some songs that have inspired us or something. And this was on the list, but we just didn't have enough time, I believe. But so far, a lot of the memories, all of the memories we've discussed have been childhood memories. This actually, for me, conjures up the memory of a time when I was in my early 20s when I used to busk, play guitar in public in Victoria, in the Inner Harbor, in between in the summer semesters between school. I realized I needed to make some money, but I didn't want to have a retail job or work as a waiter because I'd be horrible at it. So I realized, oh, why don't I just play guitar on the street? If I can make enough money doing that, that would be better because then I'll get good at doing something I want to get good at. So me and my friend Greeley, speaking of Newfies,
yeah,
so
Adam
he knows
Greeley.
About Newfoundland, he and I decided to do this, and of all the great Sloan songs, for some reason this was the one that we played, which is, I like the song. We chose this one, I don't know, maybe it just seemed like it fit that environment or something, but another song with great lyrics, and yeah, so for me, this is just a song that I don't hear it often. But whenever I do, including a couple weeks ago, when, as I say, I was thinking about playing it on one of our other episodes of the show, it just instantly takes me back to that experience of being in my early 20s. I knew how to play guitar okay, but you don't really get good at anything until you're doing it a lot. And also when you're accountable, you know what I mean? You can sit around and play guitar at home, but when you have to convince people to give you money based on how well you're entertaining them, you're going to figure out how to do it. So I definitely associate this song with that period in my life where I learned how to perform and I learned how to play guitar and sing and all that, and definitely nostalgic about that. This is The Lines You Amend by Sloan.
All you want to do was die, yeah. If only you stuck around, I know it would have made a sound. But now you're on the ocean floor, and I've opened a brand new door, brand new door. Swimming out to sea, trying to find something else.
a very Beatles ending. And man, I just listening to that song in particular, I think there's a lot of Sloan songs that are Beatlesy, but man, that one really is. We're just talking about how in the bridge, you know, you've got a different songwriter and singer in the band. It really feels like that was probably a different song idea that they just made it fit together. So there's so much about them as a band in that song that's Beatlesy. And let's be honest, they were like the 90s Beatles, and they happen to be from Canada, which is cool. And I really think the only reason that Sloan didn't have the opportunity to take off more outside of Canada was just timing. You know, they got signed to Geffen Records, and I think some money was going to be put behind them for them to move forward in the States. But it was the whole grunge thing that happened, which just didn't fit the mood. Their music is quite varied and quite upbeat. It's not just the one note thing. And there really was like, oh, there's a lot of money to be made by the brooding emo grunge thing. And there were some great bands that came out of that. But it just killed Sloan, which is too bad.
Too bad.
Which is too bad. But we are running out of time, Keith, so we got to leave it at that. Gareth is coming up very shortly here with More Than Human. You've been listening to Now We're Talking. We're going to see you again next week. And happy Easter.